back to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Nurse Nancy, and today's topic is breastfeeding. Years ago, I worked on a public health project that, among other things, encouraged hospitals to adopt the 10 steps of the Baby-Friendly Hospital Initiative, which was designed to increase breastfeeding rates. So I was dismayed when I saw an article in the Women's Health Activist entitled, "My Baby-Friendly Hospital Harmed My Baby." The author of that article, Sarah Christofferson, is with us by Skype from Washington, D.C. She's the Policy Advocacy Director for the National Women's Health Network. Sarah, could you please start by telling us what the National Women's Health Network does?
Sure, and thank you so much for having me on today. The National Women's Health Network is an advocacy organization that was founded more than 40 years ago to give women a voice in how healthcare policy and regulatory policy is made in D.C. So we are active at the FDA, lobbying on behalf of women being able to get good information about safe and effective drugs and devices. And we're active in Congress, working to make sure that the laws they pass really take women's health needs into account. So we were really active in trying to shape the Affordable Care Act, for instance, to make sure that women's health needs were lifted up as part of that law.
Okay, thank you. So let's get to your experience. You delivered your third child, right, in a baby-friendly hospital. Tell us what happened.
So yes, it was my third child, and there were about 10 years between the first and the third. And so, you know, I had a lot of confidence in my parenting, and I had a lot of confidence in what I thought would play out in a hospital, but I had never given birth in a baby-friendly hospital. And I want to back up a little bit and clarify. So that's an initiative. It's actually a global initiative, and it has 10 principles. And a hospital gets designated, you know, can seek certification as a baby-friendly hospital if they agree to meet these 10 principles. And the goal is a good one. The goal is to encourage and support breastfeeding, right? So it's, you know, those old days where women were actively discouraged from breastfeeding. This is a sort of opposition to that, where we create a nurturing promotional environment. The problem, in my experience, with a baby-friendly hospital is that instead of being supportive of breastfeeding, it ended up being really coercive. And for me and my daughter, that meant that she literally starved or dehydrated so badly that when they needed to take a blood sample from her, they couldn't take a blood sample from her that was just the size of a little pen cap, right? That's all they needed. But they kept having to slice her, squeeze out a drop of blood, it would clot closed, slice her, squeeze out another drop, it would clot closed again. She was so dehydrated from my failed attempts at breastfeeding. Sorry.
Well, so what, yeah, why? Why was she dehydrated? What happened? Why didn't she get formula?
So we were trying to breastfeed. That was the whole point of the initiative, that we'd be really promoted to breastfeed. And so I kept trying. I could tell things weren't right. She would latch, but then immediately drowse and fall asleep. You know, the lactation consultants would come in. They would try to rouse her. They would tell me, just, you know, wait a little bit longer. Just keep trying the breast over and over again. I asked to see a pediatrician. A lactation consultant was sent in instead. So whereas I wanted to really talk about why is my daughter acting so listless? Why does she seem this way? They sent in someone who just sort of kept pushing breastfeeding. And I finally said, look, I think I need to supplement with formula. They had me fill out this incredibly coercive form that really exaggerates the harms of formula filled feeding and really sort of shames any woman who might choose that. And so I didn't, until we reached this sort of catastrophic point where she was screaming hysterically in my arm for 20 minutes while they cut her. That is what finally drove me to formula feed her. And I'm actually really grateful for that experience, because other women have actually lost their children.
Babies have starved to death.
To death, yes. Babies have starved to death, where they were trying to breastfeed, they were discouraged from supplementing with formula, and by the time they realized that the baby was starving, it was too late.
That is a horrible story. Do you feel like hospitals, so women, you're in a position, you were an experienced mom, you work on women's health issues, and yet you felt coerced into withholding formula, sort of shamed into not giving formula. Can you talk a little bit more about the shame? It seems like with breastfeeding, there's always been a lot of shaming of mothers around all kinds of things. But can you talk about sort of the shaming of mothers who may want to supplement or may even not want to breastfeed?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, so I think there's two pieces, and I want to separate them out a little bit because I think they're both really important. My experience was immediately postpartum in the hospital, where I was literally dependent on hospital staff to help me use the bathroom, right? I had no personal autonomy. I couldn't eat without their help. I couldn't clean myself without their help. I couldn't relieve myself without their help. When they pressured me, for a number of reasons, because they were procedurally sort of required to pressure me, and because they might have had their own biases against formula. But when they pressured me, I felt helpless. I was exhausted. I was dependent on them for pain medication.
You had had a C-section, correct?
And I had a C-section, yes.
So you were medicated. You had had major abdominal surgery.
Correct, yes. And I really just felt absolutely dependent on them. And completely shut off from the rest of the world. So that was a really sort of eye-opening experience, to be so completely dependent on them that I couldn't advocate for myself. There's another kind of sort of longer postpartum pressure, where there's just this intense social pressure. It can come from doctors. It can come from friends and family, other people in the community. It can come from a spouse or a co-parent or a partner who says, no, we've heard breastfeeding is absolutely critical. You cannot stop. And in those cases, you end up with the breastfeeding partner, who doesn't always identify as a woman, I should clarify, but the breastfeeding partner, you know, can be utterly exhausted, utterly demoralized. It can increase postpartum depression and psychosis if that person doesn't have the emotional support to stop breastfeeding or to supplement with formula when they need to, right? And you want women and people who are breastfeeding to be supported. You want them to have access to nursing supplies without copay. You want them to have breaks at work. You want them to have the ability to nurse in public, but you also want the same sensitivity for women who either need to formula feed or choose to formula feed, because that's what's best for their families. And right now, I don't feel like women and people who choose to formula feed get that kind of same support. You know, there's a lot of shaming and there's all of these stories of women saying, I just needed my doctor to give me permission to stop, right?
Yeah. Well, so I do want to come back to these sort of broader questions, like once you're out of the hospital, what supports breastfeeding and ultimately what supports women in making the choices that are right for them, their babies, their families. But I want to go back to a second to the in-hospital experience. So as I said, I promoted the 10 steps of baby friendly, and now we see that there may be some unintended consequences. And what I keep thinking is that, I think the 10 steps are great guidelines, but I also feel like clinicians need to be really paying attention to the mother and the baby and be able to have the flexibility to do what is right for them in that circumstance. And I'm wondering how much the certification of baby friendly sort of pressures hospitals into sticking to the 10 steps in a very rigid way, like almost no matter what. What are your thoughts on that?
So absolutely. And one of the things that we really try to work for at the National Women's Health Network is systemic change. So not only do women need good information, but they also need to have systems that support their, you know, and empower their own decision making. And what I have now read after having gone through the experience and then done all this research is that the sort of bureaucratic processes that many baby-friendly hospitals put in place really punish hospital staff if they deviate from the script. Mm-hmm. So if you want to have the baby stay in the nursery so that you can sleep through the night instead of waking up and breastfeeding, you know, hospital staff might have to fill out a form. They might have to justify it to supervisors. They might be required to sort of talk you out of it. And then you end up in the scenario where, I mean, there have been cases then where, you know, exhausted women have suffocated their children in the hospital even. It was actually documented in a journal that was, I mentioned in the article. And then, you know,
I read your article, obviously. So this is the JAMA Pediatrics article, right? So very, very prestigious publication, right?
Right, absolutely. Yes, thank you. And, you know, these kind of bureaucratic hassles, even making women fill out this sort of coercive form where, you know, then the hospital staff, instead of just having formula available where I could say, hey, I want to speak to the pediatrician. I'm worried that my daughter seems listless. My other babies weren't like this. What's going on? You know, can I, I'd like to supplement with formula. And then having it be sort of this big thing where the nurses were incentivized to talk me out of it and walk me through this form and really sort of explain in these very stern voices that if I was going to give up on formula, I should be aware of, you know. So really changing those processes so that whatever a new parent chooses, she's supported in, is enormous, right? You change the incentives and they filter all the way down. They filter all the way down. And I think having a very clear conversation, I'm supportive of breastfeeding. Some of the boosterism around breastfeeding, some of these sort of exaggerated benefits, there are real benefits. Some of the benefits have been exaggerated. That sort of creates this sense in some of the hospital staff that, you know, we need to really, really pressure women here, right? Like almost as though, or the equivalent of not having a car seat. Well, it's not, right? Yeah. Formula feeding is a healthy option.
Let's talk more about that. For people who may just be joining us, we're talking with Sarah Christofferson. You're listening to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. Let's talk a little bit more about how the harms of formula feeding may have been exaggerated. Tell us about that.
So when you look kind of at a lot of the studies that have been done, part of the problem is it's really difficult to do that gold standard clinical trial, randomized trial in humans. And when you look at a lot of the studies that have been done, a lot of the benefits that have been attributed to breastfeeding, when you kind of drilled down more deeply into the data, were really related to socioeconomic factors, demographic factors, right? So white, wealthy women were having better, who breastfed, were having better outcomes than low-income women facing systemic racism,
right?
Who formula fed. And there wasn't a lot of ability to tease out what was the formula feeding and what was systemic racism and economic status. And when, you know, there have been a few studies that did attempt to do that, and a lot of those purported benefits really fell away. So, you know, it's an ever-changing field. There's always more research being done. But I think right now we can say with some confidence, okay, yes, there are some benefits. And I should clarify, I'm talking about the United States. I'm talking about a place where, you know, women largely have access to clean water. I'm not talking about some of the issues that have plagued
developing countries.
Right. But in the United States, and even, you know, I did have someone say, well, what about places like Flint? You don't want breastfeeding women drinking lead contaminated water either.
Right. You don't want to mix formula with it, and you don't want the moms drinking it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes, exactly. But you know, there are a few gastrointestinal benefits. But a lot of the sort of your kid's going to have diabetes, your kid's going to not be as smart, there's no real evidence for that.
So let's talk about, you were talking about some of the different challenges or situations that, for example, lower income women or women of color might face. Could you talk about what some of those are? And let's talk about broad social structural reforms that could actually support breastfeeding and or support better mothering, better parenting.
Right. So, I mean, the first one, I think you mentioned already, paid parental leave for both the partner that's given birth and if there's another, you know, a supportive partner. You know, there's been this push, particularly around Black women, that breastfeeding rates are lower among Black women, and we should really sort of aggressively promote breastfeeding at them. Well, a woman who comes home after giving birth and has no paid time off, has no time in the workplace to pump, is not a woman. I mean, no matter how much you shame her, you haven't changed the fundamental reality that she can't breastfeed, right? So you have done nothing to actually support her breastfeeding, but you have made her feel terrible about herself, right?
Yeah.
So paid parental leave is I think the number one biggest thing. And then of course the advancements that we have already started to put in place through the Affordable Care Act, which does require employers of a certain size to offer a quiet designated space for pumping and does require work breaks for pumping and does cover the cost of some pumping supplies without copay, right? Those kinds of advancements that support people who don't have the same sort of economic benefits is really helpful.
Well, Sarah Christofferson, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman. We just heard from Sarah Christofferson, and I shared her article, How My Baby-Friendly Hospital Harmed My Baby, with Dr. Jackie Wolf, who was interviewed during the first half hour of this show. In addition to having written a book on breastfeeding, Dr. Wolf has also published a book about the very high rates of cesarean sections in this country. She pointed out that when women undergo a C-section, as Sarah did, they and their babies are likely to face additional challenges to breastfeeding, such as grogginess from medication. She defended the need for policies to prevent infant formula companies from engaging in predatory marketing practices in hospitals, but agreed that Sarah's experience was unacceptable. Here is Dr. Wolf.
Baby Friendly wasn't intended to get rid of formula in hospitals. It was intended to get rid of the free discharge packs that were given to all mothers, even breastfeeding mothers. But you're right, that didn't mean that if a mother asked for formula and wanted formula, she should be denied formula. Mothers have the right to make their own infant feeding decisions absolutely without question. And so I would agree with that completely, that mothers have the right to make their own infant feeding decisions. baby friendly, I'm sorry, but any one size fits all approach, especially to new mothers, is so wrong. Everyone needs to look at that unique mother baby dyad and make decisions based on those two unique people. You always run into trouble when you have one size fits all formula, whether it's a certain illness or whether it's the most vulnerable of people, a new mother and a new baby. You have to look at that unique pair and figure out what does the very special unique people need and answer that question for those unique two individuals.
You're right. And so just almost being like a robot following 10 preset steps that were written for, 300 million people or something. It was well-intentioned, but there needs to be more nuance and more customer, patient, family focus.
Exactly. Exactly.
You're listening to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Nurse Nancy, and today's topic is breastfeeding. Our final guest is Victoria LaFromboise, an enrolled member of the Blackfeet Nation. Vicky has a long history as a public health professional working on women's health and maternal and child health issues. She participated in Messengers for Health, a cervical health screening project on the Crow Reservation. She also worked with the March of Dimes in Billings and later became the director of Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies in Helena. Now she's the tribal liaison at Amerigroup of Washington. Vicky, since you're out of state now and this is a local radio station, let's start by really establishing your Montana and, in fact, your Gallatin Valley creds. Where were you born?
Well, I was born out of state, actually. I was born in Omaha, Nebraska, but have been in Montana ever since then. I was kind of accidental born in Nebraska.
Okay.
But and my roots go deep into Montana.
And Bozeman, you went to MSU, yes?
I did.
And you got a master's in health promotion here at MSU?
Yes, yes. A bachelor's in community health education and master's in health education, health promotion. I think that's what it is. And go Cats forever.
Yeah, go Cats forever. Okay.
Yep.
So, actually, where you are now, you were telling me about, I think it's called Muckleshoot First Food, which is a peer support group for breastfeeding moms. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. Just a little bit about my position as the tribal liaison. I work with 29 tribes and 3 urban organizations and whatever urban natives throughout Washington. I am the liaison for them through Amerigroup. And through that, I have been lucky enough to work with the Muckleshoot through their First Nations breastfeeding thing program. And the best thing about that is, what I really like about that is, they teach, the importance of breastfeeding, but they also give out this woman's almost a first aid kit for breastfeeding. And it includes some tea to help the mother relax and maybe even get some sleep in that, but also gives her some downtime and able to just you relax a little bit. And there's some salve in it that comes from some indigenous plants, and they have some people there make this salve for them and that they are able to put on their breasts in case of chafing and things like that. But one thing through Amerigroup that I want to do is be able to make that available to all other tribes throughout Washington.
That sounds great. And the salve really sounds key, because one of probably the main complaint I've heard from breastfeeding moms is when they get like cracked, chafed, raw nipples and it hurts to breastfeed. So being able to do something to address that and using, indigenous resources sounds fantastic.
Yes.
So let's talk about, a lot of the interviews we've done in this last hour have touched on the issue of shaming moms. Like, moms can be shamed for not breastfeeding, but moms can also be shamed for breastfeeding in public. And I have heard that that shaming for breastfeeding in public is not generally as prevalent in Native communities. Could you talk about that some?
It is. So recently I was back home in Montana for a ceremony, and I was sitting next to this young lady in her early 20s, and she had probably about an 8-month-old, and she actually lives in the Gallatin County area, and she was back home in Browning area for ceremony, and she kept breastfeeding throughout the ceremony. It was probably about a 6-7 hour ceremony, and her and I were talking, and a number of people kept coming up and telling her, thanking her for breastfeeding, and thanking her for giving her baby the best nutrition that she possibly could. And her and I got into a conversation. I had told her that I had been at March of Dimes before, and she said, you know, I get the most compliments when I come home about breastfeeding my baby, and I never have been shamed, you know, coming to ceremonies and breastfeeding, and you think that, you know, ceremony probably wouldn't be the best time to breastfeed, and maybe I should leave the room. And she goes, and I never have had to leave the room, she said, but I have been in public in different places around the community in Bozeman and Gallatin County, and that's the places I get shamed. And she says, and I have this thing that I pull over and I totally cover up. And she said, it looks like I just have a big old t-shirt on, and my baby goes under there. And she goes, I've had people say, you know, take this to your car or home and do this and things like that. She said, but I never get this at home. She said, I get thanked, but out in public, I get this a lot.
What a difference.
In non-Native communities.
So, well, I know that one of the responsibilities you have in your job is to review and revise their Amerigroup's cultural competency plan. So it sort of in a nutshell, if you had to say what people in dominant culture might need to understand about breastfeeding in Native culture to be culturally competent, what would come to mind for you?
You know, that before contact is that that's the only thing they knew how to do is naturally breastfeed, because they didn't have the other mechanisms or ways that we did. Or actually, even before bottles or formula, that's what moms did, you know, a long time ago. That's how moms fed their babies, you know, so it's just a natural thing. And so in cultural competency, it's like, you know, just like, you know, in some Native communities, you don't make eye contact with mother-in-law,
right.
son-in-law, and things
right.
like that. So you need to learn these about the community that you're going to be in and all that, and just, you know these, the community that you're going to be in, the
right.
Native community. So I would say the same thing about moms, you know. Know that if there's going to be a mom breastfeeding there, don't look that way.
If that's, yeah, because yeah. what is practiced among Crow people, for example, might be different from what is practiced among Blackfeet people, et cetera. So you need to know,
exactly.
It's not just like one size fits all Native American competency. It's the community that you're really going to be.
Right, right.
That you're really going to be working in. Well, Vicki, I want to thank you so very much for joining us today. For those of you listening, you are hearing Body Politic. I am your host, Dr. Nurse Nancy. You can tune into our show the first Monday and the third Monday of every month at 1:00. You can also download our shows online. Vicki, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
My dear mother, you are my friend Yahweh. Thank you for being there, loving for me, Yahweh. I promise you not to.